this morning is West Central Education Association versus the West Central School Board. For the appellant, Mr. Gerald Kaufman, an attorney from Huron, and for the appellee, Ms. Ann Croson-Pluster, an attorney from Pier. Mr. Kaufman, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, sir. May it please the court, counsel. Again, my name is Gary Kaufman, and I represent the West Central School District in this matter. The issue before the court today is whether or not the determination of a school calendar is subject to mandatory negotiations under SDCL 3-18-3. It's the board's position, and it has been throughout, that the calendar, determination of the school calendar, is not subject to mandatory negotiations. Previously, this matter evolved out of an unfair labor practices complaint that was filed by the West Central Education Association. It proceeded to a Department of Labor hearing. At that Department of Labor hearing, the department held that the calendar was not subject to negotiations. That matter was appealed. It went up to Judge Boak. And during the pendency of that appeal, another decision came down, the winner Education Association matter, that dealt with the same issue. That matter was heard before the Office of Hearing Examiners. That Office of Hearing Examiners held that the calendar was negotiable to, you know, for the parties. And so there were supplemental briefs submitted, and Judge Boak ultimately adopted OHE's determination that the calendar was not negotiable, remanded it back to the Department of Labor. Department of Labor then, in accordance with Judge Boak's decision, held it was subject to negotiations. That matter was again appealed up. Judge Cirska addressed it this time, the second time, and he also held that the matter was subject to negotiations, and thus this appeal to the court.
Well, the calendar at one time was negotiated, wasn't it?
That,
in the negotiations with your district?
That is correct. Up until the late 1980s, Your Honor, the calendar was negotiated at the bargaining table between the board and the Teachers Association.
Is that an acknowledgement in any way of the right for the employee to do that, or do you think you could pull that off the table? I just was wondering.
My honest opinion, Your Honor, is that I believe if it's a non-negotiable item, it can be pulled off the table. At that time when it was removed from the table, that's through mutual agreement by the parties, and then the teachers attempted to have it back at the bargaining table in the late 1990s, and at that time the board said, no, it is not subject to negotiations, thus the unfair labor practices.
One of those things that falls within the management prerogative of the board because of what their duties are, it's necessary that they have the ability to establish it. Is that what your position would be here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why do you say that?
Okay, the whole scope of review.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I just wondering, because sometimes things flash through, I have to remember what I'm thinking.
That's fine, Your Honor. Okay. When determining the scope of negotiability, this court sat down in 1985 in the Rapid City Ed case, okay, a three-prong test that it adopted from New Jersey. That three-prong test, the first prong, is whether or not the subject matter intimately and directly affects the work and welfare of the teachers. The second prong of that test is whether or not the topic sought to be negotiated has been preempted by statute. The third prong of that test is whether or not the topic sought to be negotiated is a matter on which negotiated agreement would not significantly interfere with the exercise of inherent management prerogatives in determining governmental policy. So
which we've said in a number of cases school boards have we? That the boards have by statute delegated to them the inherent power to manage the district.
Yes, Your Honor, that is in statute, and the court has recognized this on more than one occasion. I would submit that the issue here, in the way that the circuit courts ruled, is that that negotiations on the issue was not preempted, which we would respectfully disagree with that determination. And second, the circuit court determined that
it is preempted by statute or regulation.
We would submit it is, yes, Your Honor.
I understood.
All aspects are preempted.
Yes, Your Honor.
Every aspect of the calendar.
Yes, Your Honor.
I understood, if I remember right, that Ms. Pluster claimed in her brief that the Associated School Boards put a bill into the legislature last year to try and extract it as a mandatory item of negotiation. Is that correct?
That is correct. The I don't know if it was presented by, well, the bill, I believe, was presented by a legislator, Clark, K, to address that. That bill was submitted not to the Education Committee. It was submitted to the House State Affairs Committee. I know I was at the hearings, Your Honor. Ultimately, that bill was killed in committee. I also know for a fact, Your Honor, that there was a classroom instructor on that committee, and I'm just hypothesizing. But what I would also submit, Your Honor, is that other statutory language, specifically the language in SDCL 13-26-1, that specifically says the school board shall set the number, shall set the school term, shall set the number of days in a school week, and things along that line. And other statutes where the legislature has said the school board shall, for by way of example, as it relates to whether or not schools should be open before Labor Day. School board shall make that determination. And under the rules of statutory construction, Your Honors, if you also looked at SDCL 2-14-1, I believe it is a specific provision there that says the term shall is mandatory. Okay, and where we get into, I think, the disagreement here is whether or not the board has discretion to negotiate the calendar or discretion in setting the calendar. And we would respectfully submit that as it relates to preemption, any issue, and this court has acknowledged, indicated in the past about there must be specific language regarding preemption. What I would submit to this court is that this, the calendar statutes, in light of 214-1 and the 1326 calendar statutes, do say a school board has discretion on how it forms the calendar, but it does not have discretion to negotiate the calendar with the teachers' association.
But the statutes, as you've said it in your brief, some of them speak in the imperative in particular aspects of the calendar, which would preempt, but some of them don't. I mean, year-round school is spoken to, the beginning of school is spoken to, but there's other things that aren't spoken to, like, you know, when's Christmas vacation going to be? The statutes don't speak in the imperative on that.
Not specifically to the calendars, Your Honor, or to the vacation days, but I would submit when the statutes do say the school board shall set the school term, incorporated within those statutes, it is implied that it is up to the school board to make the determination when classes will be held. And that's ultimately what this is all about. Who makes the determination when school will be in session for the benefit of students?
What's your strongest argument, preemption or management prerogative?
It's a difficult question, Your Honor. I believe they are both strong. If I was required to say one or the other, I would probably say the significant interference, Your Honor.
Well, you're kind of begging the question a little bit because the board will always make the final decision because you can impose your will. So what is the harm in sitting down and talking about it if you're going to make the final decision anyway?
Okay. A couple of things, Your Honor. One is Judge Sirska brought in what you're referring to as it relates to SDCL 3-18-3, or 8.2, I'm sorry, that refers to the statutory right of a school board to impose contract terms should negotiations not result in an agreement, and should there go through mediation, fact-finding, Department of Labor, then the board has the right to impose. However, Your Honor, I would submit that the Rapid City Court, which rejected one of the five teacher proposals, never once indicated that, referred to 3-18-2, the statutory right of a board to impose. I would respectfully submit that the board's right to impose terms after negotiations is not part of the three-part test. Again, the three-part test, the third prong of the test, Your Honor, again, says a matter is negotiable only if it is a matter on which a negotiated agreement would not significantly interfere with the exercise of inherent management prerogatives pertaining to the determination of governmental policy.
Which it won't, because you can impose your will in the end anyway.
But it talks about negotiated agreement, Your Honor. I would respectfully disagree. It refers to the negotiated agreement. Is the topic such that It is so significant as it relates to the determination of governmental policy that it is removed from negotiations. I would submit to this court that there is a definite difference between the dominant issue, and that's what I believe the Rapid City court said as it rejected the one provision or one proposal of the teachers. The teachers basically had submitted a proposal that teacher compensation would be based upon student ability. This court said that is not subject to negotiations because that issue impinges upon a matter so important that it is held only by the school board. And if 3-18-8.2, the right to impose contract, was applicable, then it would not have made sense that the court would have, one, adopted the test, or two, found that proposal inapplicable, because the board could have negotiated it, and then, by imposing its will after negotiations, if you will, rejected that. I would submit that the 3-18-8.2 right of a school board to impose a contract for all practical purposes would make the third prong of the three-part test irrelevant, because nothing would be so significant, you know, in terms of the process, so as to exclude negotiations, because the board could ultimately impose their will.
Does the legislature dictate certain things about, like, it seems like they say, how long you got to be in the school in order to get finance or state aid or anything like that?
I'm not a school finance expert, Your Honor. I'll admit that. But I know that there's a statutory requirement that students, I believe it's the high school students, must be in school for a minimum of 1,950 hours.
So you got to work your calendar, is that, to get to comply with what dictates they have? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. And that, again, is a minimum requirement. School districts do have the flexibility to have students in class more than the statutory minimum.
Let's zero in on this third prong for just a minute. You've referred to inherent management prerogatives, but then there's a qualifying phrase that says pertaining to the determination of governmental policy. Well, how does the school calendar pertain to the determination of governmental policy?
Would submit, Your Honor, and I think that the cases cited in our brief refer to a number of jurisdictions which do make the determination it's educational policy. And I would submit that the basis for those decisions are that, first of all, a school calendar does not affect only teachers. It affects teachers, it affects students, it affects all personnel employed by the school district or not represented by a teachers association.
So are you kind of changing the definition of governmental policy from governmental to educational or to, say, school board policy?
I would submit a school board policy, Your Honor, an education policy is a governmental policy because it makes the determination when students are going to be in school and receive the education that they are allowed under the law and under our Constitution, and which the statutes have, you know, imposed that obligation, if you will, upon school districts to provide that educational opportunity, and therefore how the school districts do that, provide that educational opportunity for students, is a determination of governmental policy.
Mr. Kaufman, if I understand your argument correctly, you are saying that under my previous question, the third part of the Rapid City test would be nullified by an interpretation of 3-18-8.2 that why not talk about it because the board can impose its will anyway, correct?
Yes.
Do you think though that it might be important that that statute was passed 3 years after Rapid City's test was adopted by this court? There was no statute at the time Rapid City came down. Apparently it was passed in 1988, according to the code.
I would submit, Your Honor, that This court has just recently, in the Webster case, when it dealt with scope of negotiations as it related to whether or not a staff reduction policy was subject to negotiations. Yeah. And again, there was nothing in the language by this court 2 years ago that gave any indication whatsoever that 3-18-8.2 in any way, shape, or form applies to the test as relates to the scope of negotiations. Again, I would submit...
Did Webster really deal more with the fact that it allowed the school board to impose their last best offer?
I believe that was a part of it, Your Honor. I know Ms. Plooster was involved in that case. I was not.
That seemed, as I recollect, to be the critical issue in that.
But I think they imposed or unilaterally removed a recall policy possibly from their school district policies in an unfair labor practices complaint evolved out of that based upon whether or not it, you know, had to be negotiated. And a couple of things. One, as it relates to, again, the third prong of the test, doesn't talk about the negotiations process. It talks about the negotiated agreement. And our three-part test was based upon the In Re Local 195 test out of New Jersey. That court, when it's talking about or trying to explain, if you will, or not trying to, in explaining what is meant basically by the third prong of the test, the court was very clear, the In Re Local court was very, very clear that what's involved here is a balancing issue. Is the matter, what's the dominant issue here, the dominant concern? Is it a matter of governmental concern or, conversely, employee concern?
When you talk about governmental concern, do you read that to mean like the school district is really a governmental body functioning, isn't it, rather than what the legislature dictates? So that when you talk about governmental policy, you're talking about the school district policy in essence, aren't you?
That is correct, Your Honor. And this court has recognized previously in the Westington Springs case, that school board policy has full force and effect of law. You are correct. It is, in a sense, it is a local government in determining governmental policy. The other thing I would submit, as it relates to the 3-18-8.2 kind of thing, is, again, the language this court used in Webster. Basically indicated that there were things, again, so significant. The language was whether or not to implement recall or staff reduction in recall is an inherent management right, basically taking it away from negotiations. The process, if you will, for implementing that staff reduction policy, how it is to be carried out to affected employees, is subject to negotiations. And so, again, I would submit that the third prong of the test talks about the issue that is sought to be negotiated as compared to focusing on the negotiations process. And I would submit the circuit court in this case was definitely focusing on the negotiations process as compared to the topic itself.
I'd like to go back, before you run out of time, to the chief's question about the right to impose the last decision. As I understand it, if your argument holds true, then that would also trump the first and second prongs, would it not? The right to be able to impose an agreement. If you're saying Rapid City trumps that, then if something's preempted, it would be equally trump it, would it not?
I'm not sure I understand the court's question.
The question was only asked to you in terms of management prerogative and whether the right to impose removes it from the Rapid City test. And you're saying no. But then I would take it you would have to say the same thing for preemption and test number one as well.
I would submit that possibly with the exception of preemption and how this court views preemption for all practical purposes, yes, if this court believes that 3-18-8.2 you know, supersedes Rapid City, then I would submit that for all practical purposes, everything would be negotiable. I would submit that this court's decision in Rapid City, which said that compensation based upon student ability is not subject to negotiations, if that case was before this court right now and if 318.8.2 controlled, that matter would be negotiable. For all practical purposes, would the Webster case, would implementation, the actual decision to implement staff reduction in a school district, arguably under 3-18-8.2, that would be subject to negotiations. And I would very strongly submit, Your Honors, that that is not a correct application or the intended application of the Rapid City test. The Rapid City test, and I think that's been affirmed basically like in the Webster case, says there are matters so significant. There are matters so significantly important that they are outside the realm of negotiations, even though they may not be preempted, and even though they may significantly affect work and welfare of the teachers. Thank you,
Mr. Kaufman. Ms. Plooster, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counselor, may it please the court. On behalf of the West Central Education Association, we believe that the school calendar is a subject of mandatory negotiations. We also believe there may be a way that this court cannot even have to address the Rapid City case, in that SCCL 318.3 says the following categories are subject to mandatory negotiability, that being rates of pay, wages, hours of employment, and other conditions of employment.
I've got to stop you right now. I'm sorry to stop you so early, but that's exactly what I was trying to ask Mr. Kaufman, and I probably wasn't clear enough. If that argument that you've just given to us prevails, that means that if the legislature speaks in the imperative, say, for instance, on something like the rate of pay for teachers, that in that case, if your argument holds true, even though the legislature spoke in the imperative and preempted essentially negotiations, that it would still be subject to negotiations.
I would say that if the legislature were to set the salary as you indicate, then the salary, depending on if it's a minimum salary or a salary schedule, that would be depending on how the legislature worded the statute, would either be the minimum school districts could do, and then they could negotiate further, or that would be all that the districts could do, and there would be no negotiation depending on how the statute was worded. I'm not sure that I'm totally understanding where you're going, and I'm not sure that is where I am going.
Okay, maybe I should let you finish your presentation. Let's hear the rest of it.
Thank you. School calendar is not a topic of mandatory negotiability that this court has addressed yet, has not put it somewhere. However, the Connecticut Supreme Court has addressed the issue under the hours of employment. In the West Hartford Education Association versus DeCourcy case, the Connecticut Supreme Court said that school calendar was not mandatory negotiable in that state because its public negotiations statute specifically left out hours of employment as being a subject that was mandatory negotiable in Connecticut, and the Connecticut Supreme Court found that school calendar was directly related to hours of employment and therefore found that it was not negotiable in Connecticut. I would argue that since hours of employment is specifically in the areas that can be negotiated under our statute, and since hours would since school calendar would directly relate to hours of employment, you could find that school calendar is mandatory negotiable under the hours of employment.
Isn't that conditions of employment instead of hours of employment?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Isn't the actual word condition of employment rather than hours of employment?
No, 318.3 says there's four categories.
Okay.
And then those are rates of pay, wages, hours of employment, and other conditions of employment.
Okay.
And I am arguing that You don't even have to get to other conditions of employment because you can put it under the hours of employment, which would make it negotiable.
But again, let me take one last stab at it. It seems to me that all four categories in 318, wages, rates of pay, hours, and other conditions of employment, all four of those categories must either be subject to the Rapid City case or not. All four categories, it doesn't seem to me that the legislature or any decision of this court has ever said that we can dissect those four conditions in 318 and say some of them are subject to the Rapid City case, but some of them are not. And that was the point I was trying to ask of you before. It seems to me whether it's other conditions of employment, whether it's rates of pay or whether it's hours or wages, they're all subject to Rapid City or they all are not.
I would respectfully dissent from your view of the Rapid City case, because the Rapid City case is based in part on the Aberdeen case. And my reading of the Aberdeen case shows that they were only dealing in that case with other conditions of employment and they were not going with the other categories. And based upon my reading, I would say that they're each their own separate categories.
But aside from that, we have Webster and other decisions as well that have looked at this. Do all four go subject to Rapid City or not?
I would submit that no, they don't. I would say that...
Which ones are subject to Rapid City and which ones are not?
The other conditions of employment, and that is why the Rapid City case is there, is to tell you what other conditions of employment that aren't rates of pay, wages, or hours of employment would be mandatory and negotiable. Here's your test. You put them into the three prongs, and if they meet all three prongs, then they're mandatory and negotiable. That is how I read the Rapid City case, and of course, the court may read it differently.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed in the past on these decisions, we've a lot of times looked to New Jersey, it seems like, as, you know, some authority. And there's just one New Jersey case that I came across that says, and I think it's cited in briefs, we firmly believe that when school begins, when it ends, when the buildings are open, when children shall be admitted, when holidays occur, matters of inherent managerial policy, as regulated by the public school code and under no circumstances, should be made items of collective bargaining. Now, that does seem like it's a management thing. When you're going to open up, when you're going to close. Now, the hours that a teacher has to be there could be different than that, too. Doesn't that seem really to be a management thing? I mean, that seems pretty powerful to me. Maybe not to you, but what do you have in response to that?
I'm not sure which New Jersey case that you're referring to.
I think it's in Burlington County, College.
The Burlington case was decided prior to the In Re Local case that the Rapid City three-part test was taken from. And since the New Jersey Supreme Court determined that calendar was non-negotiable prior to the three-prong test, it's never revisited it. So I'm not sure how the New Jersey court would interpret school calendar under its three-part test. But I still believe that it meets the three-part test and is mandatory and negotiable. I believe that this court also but uses private sector National Labor Relations Board decision to help it determine how it is going to interpret our public bargaining laws when there is nothing comparable. And it's my understanding in the private sector that the days and hours that employees are to report to work is a mandatory subject under the private sector, and therefore I believe it would also be in this. I believe that...
Did Minnesota also... Is there a case in Minnesota that also holds that it's not a... Or with the Regents case that said it's not a mandatory subject of bargaining?
You may be right. Right now, the particular state is not clicking in my brain. But I do also believe there is a difference between K through 12
schools, and the higher ed. And I think there is one case, and I'm not sure if it's one that Mr. Kaufman has cited or one that I have cited, that basically gets into that difference, that explains that higher ed has a different purpose than K through 12, and this is a K through 12 case. We believe that...
They're both educational, aren't they?
Yes, they are. We believe that under the three-part test that this is a subject that has not been preempted by statute. Recently, this court in the Webster case addressed the test for preemption and said that the topic had to be in statute addressing the imperative and that leaves nothing to the discretion of the public employer. While we will see that the statutes in some instances do say the board shall set, and that can be interpreted as being the imperative, for other than the minimum number of hours that the students have to be in session, there is nothing else that is dictated to the school districts. The school district can decide themselves what day they want to start school.
As long as they have 180 days by the time they're done.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There is not a uniform starting date in this state for the schools. Every school district does it differently. So we believe that there is a lot of discretion in those statutes that would make it not preempted by statute. There's enough discretion there so that it does not meet the Webster test.
Let me ask you your opinion. Do you think this is primarily a preemption case or a management prerogative case? On which issue should we decide this case?
I would say it is more the preemption. I would agree with Justice Gilbertson that the ability of the school district to impose the calendar of its choice on the school district would mean that there is not significant interference under the third prong. Again, the third prong deals with significant interference, and as I just said, we don't believe that there is significant interference. We also believe that our review of the record shows that the district has never shown a government policy that is affected here, and that is the other part of the test. You have to have a government policy that is going to be affected, and we believe that the district has not shown any such policy. It makes a blanket statement that it is policy, but I cannot find any policy.
What kind of policies would be management prerogative in the school setting?
As this court pointed out in Webster, the decision whether or not to RIF, we would, I guess, concede that hiring and firing would be management prerogative.
But not deciding when you need employees to do a job, that's not a management prerogative.
In the context of the Rapid City three-prong test, I'm going to say no, because I believe that there is enough discretion since the statutes are not specific as to when the school should start, that there should be some leeway there for the employees to help the district determine when they need to report.
But hiring, I miss hiring and firing
or riffing are really management prerogatives.
Yes, and I did say that they were.
We don't have that here. What we have here is a calendar.
Yes.
Says when school starts, holidays,
everything else, and when it ends.
Yes.
When you have teacher conferences, probably.
Yes.
When you have in-service
and all this. That's all set up in the calendar, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
And why shouldn't the board decide that? It's they're running the school, kind of. There are other things that are much more important, it seems to me, than setting up, you know, when you get the kids there, when the kids are going to be gone, and all that. And never having been on a school board, I'd have to say. But why isn't that a management priority? I just have a hard time understanding why it isn't.
I guess I would go back to the Webster case and say that the, for lack of a better term, the philosophy of the school district, whether or not it wants to stay with the normal nine-month agricultural calendar that now exists, or would go to perhaps year-round school, would perhaps be management prerogative. But the mechanics of that decision would be mandatory and negotiable.
You say that the school district could set up point A, we start, point B, we end, and everything in between would be negotiable? Would you agree with that? That would they at least have the right to go point A and B?
I would say that I believe that point A and B are also mandatory and negotiable.
The only thing they can say is it'll start in August and maybe end in May?
I guess I am having a hard time understanding why this case is in front of the court in the first place. I know we began it, but in the school district in question, for years they negotiated a calendar. Then they did it in the traditional across the table as part of everything else they were negotiating. I think it was the board itself determined that doing the calendar that way was taking up too much of the negotiations time they had to set aside.
And are you saying they waived their right?
No, they did not waive their right. They went to an alternative form of bargaining, and that was they set up a calendar committee that negotiated the calendar on the side and not also while they were negotiating salary and fringe benefits and the other things that are bargained. Then once the calendar was set, then that became part of the negotiated agreement. And then
I would understand why it's here to help your understanding is they have an absolute right to appeal as these things go along. So that's why we're here today.
I understand that part of it, but what I was trying to get at is that negotiating calendar in this district had never been a problem until the board decided that it no longer wanted to negotiate calendar. In fact, in this state, until this case, there had really never been a question of whether or not calendar was mandatory or negotiable. That's not to say that it is negotiated in every school district, because every school district is different in what they do negotiate. But for those that negotiated calendar, it was never questioned that it was a mandatory subject of negotiations, and they just negotiated it.
Well, with this, are you saying that some school districts do negotiate things that you would concede are non-negotiable, at least non-mandatorily negotiable? If we went across South Dakota, would we find some districts negotiating things that have been settled that they're not mandatorily negotiable?
I think if they were, there are some things that if were put to the three-part Rapid City test would probably not meet it, but they have decided to negotiate it and it's not a problem. If that is answering your question.
Why is the school calendar so important to the teachers?
Teachers are by statute, or at least by law, I should back up because I think it is regulation, required to renew their teaching certificate every 5 years. They need to know when they are going to be able to take the course requirements. They're not like other employees that can go to their employee and say, hey, I need this week off for vacation or I need this off to go do this. They are bound by the fact that they have to be in the classroom from whenever school starts to whenever school ends. And we believe that it is very important to them. And it's not only teachers. I know in the Sioux Falls School District, they have around a half a dozen different
negotiating groups.
And all of those groups get together
with the board and negotiate calendars. So I'm just not talking about teachers. This case involved just the Teachers Association,
but other groups also negotiate the calendar. And so in the districts where there are more than just the one association, there is the case where they all are involved in negotiating that calendar.
How do the parents and students figure into this process, and do they have a voice?
They would have a voice through the Teacher Center parents. They would have a voice through the administration. Depending on the school district, there may be even a committee that has some parents come in. Again, it is done differently in every school district.
Would they be eligible to participate in the collective bargaining?
The parents, no. But having a voice, having a say in what the calendar is, it probably, one, be through the elective process through the school board.
So if we hold that this is subject to mandatory negotiations, parents and other employees that are not members of SDA would not be able to participate in the collective bargaining as to when the school calendar should be?
I see that my time is up.
No, keep going.
Okay.
I would say that through the election process, through the board itself, then there would be the parental say, because they would elect board members accordingly. Again, through the teachers who are parents, and when the teachers bargain, they survey, and I think in some school districts may even survey the public or get an idea of what the calendar is. But speaking as a parent, in a school district, I think you just kind of go along with what is set up and don't believe that you would really have a say other than go complain to the school board.
Justice Sabres also has a question.
Why do you say that the school calendar does not significantly interfere with governmental policy?
Again, I think I...
Other than impasse, aside from impasse.
Other than an impasse, I am at a loss at this point. I know both Judge Bogue and Judge Zirka agreed with my argument that because of the impasse, that there was not significant interference. And I think Justice Gilbertson has kind of alluded to that also.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Kaufman, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Why do you say that the school calendar significantly interferes with governmental policy?
Because governmental policy, I would submit, equates to determination of a school calendar. When a school is going to be in session is governmental policy. And I would submit that as the court was just asking about the right of parents, et cetera, to be involved in the process, because the calendar that when school is going to be in session affects not only the teachers, it is broader than the teachers. And therefore, I would submit that it is a matter, just again, like the matter that Webster said, whether or not the school district implements staff reduction, like this court said in Rapid City, that compensation, teacher compensation based upon student ability, that topic itself is so significant that it is removed from negotiations, even though it may significantly affect work and welfare of the teachers, and even though it may arguably not be preempted.
Are you suggesting then that the appropriate way to do it is simply have the board hold a public meeting, as they do probably every month, and take input from interested people, which may be the teachers union, may be the parents, maybe anybody?
Yes, I think that that is an option that is available to a school district if they want to implement such a policy of that nature. And I would submit that what this discussion...
Well, that's the mechanism then that the teachers would have to be heard, is to go to the school board meeting and say, on behalf of the teachers' union, we'd sure like to have the calendar start such and such a date.
Definitely, Your Honor. I would submit that this issue, the lack of a better way to say it, is maybe a power issue in terms of, is it an issue of teacher input into determination of the school calendar? Answer to that is no. It's whether or not the calendar is subject to mandatory negotiations. The counselor, Ms. Plooster, referred to after it went off, bargaining went off the table, the calendar went off the table in the late 80s, it went into a calendar committee. That calendar committee was made up of administration, was made up of teachers. I'm not sure if there was a board member on it or not. And they discussed it. We would not call that an alternative form of bargaining. We would say it was a committee. And then that committee would make a recommendation. It would go up to the board. On occasion, the board would approve, you know, or adopt that recommendation. At times, the board set a calendar that was different from the recommendation. So we're not really talking about input. We're talking about manner of input. And we are submitting, like in one of the cases I've cited in my briefs, was that the teachers have the right, I would submit, to negotiate the impact of the calendar, number of days that they are required to be at work based upon the school calendar. But that
let me ask you this. When they talk about negotiating calendar, what do they want to negotiate about the calendar?
Your Honor,
They obviously know the months and everything, but is it, are we talking about time of starting, time off, or what? I mean, is that all items they want to discuss, like Christmas holidays or whatever?
Your Honor, I have been in school district negotiations at the table on behalf of a school district where a calendar...
I've been there too and said no a lot, but I want to know what they...
Basically, it's my perception that the teachers' associations are saying the calendar is negotiable, everything is negotiable. What day in August or September is school going to start? When is the last, you know, not only for in-services, but then first class day? When are the classes to be done in the spring, and then are there any in-service days after that? Is there going to be a spring break, an Easter break, President's Day, you know, Monday and Tuesday off? When is Christmas vacation going to be off? When is parent-teachers, you know?
Well, don't schools usually just take the holidays that the state says are holidays?
Not automatically, Your Honor. No, they do not. Christmas vacation can vary between districts based upon...
length, probably, but they still get Christmas Day and Christmas Eve off.
Oh, definitely, Your Honor. And same thing like with Easter break. A lot of times Easter break will have Good Friday and Monday. You may have a Tuesday or Wednesday. There may be a break a lot of times around the basketball tournament time.
Isn't there a statewide initiative 2 years ago that sought to prohibit school districts from beginning the school year before Labor Day? All that?
I don't recall, Your Honor, the initiative to which you were referring. I know that in statute in 1993, the legislature set down what I would call the Labor Day statutes as they relate to the calendar. And in those statutes, the legislature said school board may determined to start school before Labor Day, subject to a referendum, and then the voters, you know, will make that determination.
Okay. Is that an indication that there is a strong public interest in the school year outside simply what the teachers are concerned about?
I believe there is definitely a public interest. I believe that was recognized by the legislature by giving the legislature giving the public the right to refer a decision to open school before Labor Day to a public vote. Yes. Other thing, Your Honor, there was a question asked to Ms. Plooster about New Jersey. A couple of things. One is, again, Rapid City Court adopted the NRA Local 195 test. Okay. The 195 court did not establish a three-part test that I think has been implied. That three-part test in New Jersey had preceded it, because the NRA Local 195 court says we have already recognized, you know, a three-part test. The other thing is, as it relates to New Jersey, well, the NRA Local court itself, even though it was not a specific school calendar case, it was an employee negotiations case, It specifically acknowledged that it is well settled in that state that school calendar is not subject to negotiations. A Pilesville case, New Jersey, which was, I believe, in the 70s, basically, again, indicated that a school calendar is not subject to negotiations. And New Jersey Appellate Court, after In Re Local, and after this court adopted the three-part test in 195, in approximately 1999, I want to say, the Skadaway Court, again, addressed the issue.
Is that case in your brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And acknowledged that, again, it is the rule in New Jersey that the calendar is not subject to negotiation. So before In Re Local, Piscataway, in New Jersey, all acknowledge it's not subject to negotiations. That's the test that we adopted. And again, the Piscataway court came after this court's decision in Rapid City. Other comment, Your Honor, is that Justice was asking about, you know, rates of pay, wages, hours, and other working conditions. I would submit to this court that they are not four separate distinct categories, and that the Rapid City test specifically only applies to other working conditions. I would submit to this court, and really good, that, and I believe it's in my brief, Your Honor, that the court, and I want to say it was in Oregon, basically said that, because they had what I would call a laundry list, if you will, wages, hours, working conditions, etc. And the court there, when it was addressing the calendar issue, said what the legislature did when enacting that statute with rates of pay, wages, hours, and other working conditions, they legislated by example. Rates of pay, wages, and hours are all examples of working conditions. And to support the premise that they are not four distinct categories is, again, in Rapid City, and I know I keep coming back to it, but that's the threshold case. Rapid City, the teachers wanted to negotiate compensation based upon student ability. So if compensation, you know, is not, you know, under the category of the three-part test, and again, how would this court have said it's not subject to negotiation? It is subject to negotiation. So let's admit it's not four distinct categories. The other thing, and my time's almost up, as it relates to the hours of employment, would submit that the hours of employment are a distinct, different issue than a school calendar. Most school districts, every school district I'm aware of, probably does negotiate a work day, 8:30 to 3:30, 8 to 4, whatever the case may be. And let's admit that that is different. We believe, Your Honor, in just closing, that the weight of authority is behind the proposition that the calendar is not subject to negotiations. We do believe it is preempted by 2-14-1, the shall language, if you will. And we believe that if you're looking at the dominant issue, which is a school calendar, it is a governmental concern, an educational concern, and should not be subject to negotiations.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.